Hello and welcome to the Soil Health Hub podcast. In each episode, we invite key industry experts and farmers to explore and debate challenges, opportunities, and innovations around soil health and its implications on farming. Tune in and listen to the Soil Health discussion with your host, Rob Ward.
Welcome, my name's Rob Ward, and this is the first of what will be many podcasts all about soil health. The people we'll be interviewing will be the real people on the farm that are making the decisions day to day. And I want to know what those decisions are and the challenges they're overcoming. We want practical solutions of how to improve our soil. And to get us going is Jake Freestone. Jake Freestone is the farm manager for Overbury Enterprises. It's a 1,600 hectare mixed farm in the beautiful rolling hills of Gloucestershire and Worcestershire in England. He's a LEAF accredited farmer and a Nuffield scholar. In 2014, he won Progressive Farmer of the Year by the Farm Business Awards. In 2020, he was Soil Farmer of the Year by the Carbon Toolkit. He's a farmer advisor as well as being the farm manager for Overbury for the Cool Farm Alliance. Jake regularly writes blogs and does podcasts and videos all about the subjects around soil health. The links to those will be in the notes. We look forward to your feedback, and here is the podcast. Enjoy. Hi, Jake. Welcome to the Soil Health Hub. And how are you today?
Rob, I'm very well indeed, thank you. And it's great to be here. And thank you very much for asking me to come and answer a few questions for you.
It's a pleasure. Firstly, congratulations on your achievement as the Soil Farmer of the Year. Talk me through what it felt like when you got that.
I was really chuffed, actually. It's been a combination of a journey that we're not even starting, really, but it feels like that we've been on it for the last 7 or 8 years, and trying to push the agenda of more sustainable farming, more regenerative farming, which it focuses around the health of the soil, to try and push that into people's awareness and up the political agenda and the farming agenda as well.
That's great. Let me ask you some more detailed questions around that. The Soil Health Hub is about real stuff for real farmers. Yes, it's forward thinking and the future of how we are going to approach this challenge, but it is about real outcomes and real situations that ultimately lead to a viable future for this. That's very important for us at the Soil Health Hub. So what does soil health mean to you, Jake?
That's a really good question. And it means, my opinion and my view on it changes the more I learn about it. So if I go back to my sort of the start of my farming career, and certainly when I came here to Overbury in 2003, we were ploughing all the farm, and we gradually moved away to a minimal cultivation scenario, partly based on economics, to be honest. How can we reduce our cost of production by trying to do less to the fields, use less diesel, be more efficient, cover more acres with fewer men, fewer machines. And then that sort of carried on, that thinking, right through till about 2011. And then we were starting then to really scratch till. So we were just looking at some of our very thin soils. We've got Cotswold Brash, which is a very thin soil over limestone. And we were sort of constantly ploughing up big rocks and cultivating them up. And it was, you know, evident that that's, you know, degrading the soil and the fields and, you know, breaking equipment at the end of the day. And we had a really wet autumn in 2012, and we'd started to scratch till a few fields then. And that autumn, you could have blindfolded me and taken me to any field, and I could have told you how we cultivated that field by how far I sank into the mud. And that was a bit of a light bulb moment for me, as in we need to be able to do this a better way to enable our machinery to travel, to capture organic matter and keep that in the soil. So it started off with healthy soil in terms of, you know, not moving it around too much, trying to do as little to it as we could get away with once compaction was removed and out of the way. So it became a sort of a journey, really, of sort of exploration and achievement and wonder as well, because, you know, we're finding things, fungi growing in the middle of our fields, for instance, mushrooms all over the farm. And it's, you know, that's the sort of stuff that we never really appreciated or expected. So to me, the healthy soil, the nub of it now is can you get a spadeful of it, break it apart and find life in there. Can you find earthworms? Can you open it up and you can smell it and it smells sweet and organic-y, a bit like compost, you know, that you would put on your garden. So trying to actually put a measurement on soil health, I think, is a really big challenge in terms of putting a number to it. It's more a feeling, I suppose. And I think that's where the industry will have challenges going forward.
Well, I think that's probably why there's been some resistance to it, because some of the sort of fact-based people don't really see that. They don't really get it if they're in that way, because you can't put, they don't like feelings, they like facts. And so maybe that's, and also makes it sound a little bit like it's idealistic rather than real. So let's focus on the practical side then. You've now moved to a mixed farm, really up about on Overbury Enterprises. And so how important is that? Before we answer that question, the whole process of intercropping, keeping the soil growing something, that's fascinating. And it is a total turnaround. And it sounds like that you literally did have a light bulb moment, say 7 years ago, it sounded thereabouts. And the key productivity gains you've seen, give me a simple example of cost savings and profitability increases you've had as a result of this type of thinking.
I suppose the easiest one that's very straightforward to measure is diesel use. And we have gone from about 52 litres a hectare to establish a crop of wheat down to 17 litres if we roll it afterwards. So from an economic point of view, cash going out of the business, that's made some huge savings across the sort of acreage that we're farming. So we're combining about 950 hectares here. We've got another 250 hectares contract farming next door. So that's making some significant cash savings. In terms of output and productivity, our wheat yields have remained the same. We had a really good year in 2019, highest yield of all the crops across the farm. That's partly weather. We had just the right weather at the right time, but it's also, I think, a combination of how we're building organic matter in the soil. Organic, having said just now that you can't really measure soil health, one of the indicators is organic matter. And we've moved some organic matters on some of our sand and gravel landfills from 1.1% on based on loss of ignition in 2005 up to just under 3%, 2.98% in 2017, I think we took those tests. So we are making changes. But I think the challenge we have is it's a biological system. So it is influenced by very wet autumns, very wet winters. But in terms of profitability, yeah, our costs in terms of machinery replacement are going down. We've lost 280 horsepower worth of tractor out of the system. So that's, you know, reduced capital employed in the business that can be used elsewhere. We're not replacing cultivators and drills. The drill we bought was an expensive drill, but it will have a lifespan of probably 20 years here on the farm. So in terms of that recapitalization and reinvestment, we're trying to be as slim as we possibly can to compete in a very, very difficult marketplace.
Do you think then your soil, as a result of this attitude towards focusing on constantly improving the biologicals in the soil, is protecting you against more extreme weather scenarios?
I'm convinced it will do. We're on the journey. That, you know, wow. Last year we had such a wet winter followed by such a dry spring. And I would love, in a funny kind of way, to have had a field that was still conventional every year to be able to compare. Because I don't think you can just do it on an annual basis. I hear and see lots of reports. We tried a direct drill last year, in the system, and it didn't work. But that's sort of one crop in one year, not in a whole rotation and a whole shift of everything else you need to do to make the direct drilling work. Things like cover cropping, things like a wider, more diverse rotation, spring crops in there, livestock we mentioned earlier on. So it's part of that whole approach, really. But, you know, in terms of organic matter, our limiting factor here in the UK, believe it or not, is still drought in terms of wheat yields. So anything we can do to manage water is important. And for me, that is about holding on to it when it's in short supply. Organic matter will do that. And then also sort of shedding it through the soil profile in periods of excess. And again, organic matter and structure will enable us to do that. And if you look at the predictions of climate change, we will be having wetter winters, drier summers, both of which will prove a challenge in growing food in the UK in the future. So yes, we can omit some of that with irrigation, but that will be difficult and expensive. So the next best thing is to improve organic matter. So you've got a bigger sponge to be able to hold that nutrient and the water.
It sounds like it's an insurance system, which of course you have to be patient to get the right policy to make it work.
Yeah, I've not heard of it like that, but you're right. It's a bit like a bank account as well. I think you have to keep adding to your bank account rather than in a conventional system. If you think of organic matter as your current account, you need to keep topping it up. You can't keep withdrawing it. And I think that as an industry, we've been guilty of that for very many, you know, logical reasons. I think we have a very temperate climate here. So erosion is a slow process in the UK. We don't have those extremes of, you know, dust bowls blowing across prairies, monsoons, and then massive floods that you see in sort of Bangladesh and those sorts of places. So it's happening very slowly. And I think the problem with that is it sort of becomes a bit unnoticed. There's a bit of brown water running down the ditch. Well, you know, it always happens. And actually it can't always happen, because at the end of the day, that's the farmer's asset. That's, you know, it's what your farm is made of. And that's the bit I really struggle for some people to not want to change.
Yeah, I'm sure that change is always slow and actually for good reason, because there's a lot of risk in farming, and it's about mitigating that risk. I'm just going to go back to the point you made about organic matter. And yes, it would be amazing if everybody was doing organic matter calculations every year and doing the level of detail you said about that one field that's increased, which is amazing. Other characteristics you think are important for measuring soil health, what are those?
I mean, a key indicator, which is really easy for anybody to do, is earthworm counting. Aiming for 16 earthworms in a spadeful of soil equates to 400 in a square metre. And that's a very good indicator of, they did some meta-analysis a few years ago, and that is shown to have an increase in productivity, nutrient cycling, draining, aeration, all those sorts of things. So that's a really key one. We're starting to look now in a bit more detail about biological and fungal relationships within the soil. Our soils are usually bacterially dominated. Because we constantly cultivated them. So the fungi didn't have a chance to get themselves established. And then you'd go through with a plow or a cultivator and pull those hyphae apart and disrupt that population. Whereas bacteria are kind of much faster adapting to that change in environment. So our fungal populations are increasing, and we're just starting to measure that now. Actually, this autumn got hold of a little bit of equipment which we can test on farm, our bacteria and fungi relationships. And we're looking for about a one-to-one relationship of fungi to bacteria.
I was going to ask you, what is your fungal bacterial ratio? And I'm not sure many farmers know this or even ask themselves this question, but I suspect in 5 years' time, people will quote their fungal bacterial ratio as if it's part, is just as important as I don't know, the nitrogen account they've got in the soil as well. And it's interesting from the group, the work we were doing within the Soil Health Hub is finding out how much that fungal bacteria ratio can affect the nutritional optimization of the soil to help plants be more productive and higher levels of immunity. Have you seen that? Have you seen levels of less need for fungicides, less need for using fertilizers?
Yeah, I mean, really, really good question. And that's the aim. We want to be able to reduce our use in fungicides and fertilizer. Nitrogen fertilizer specifically, in terms of its carbon footprint, it's massive here in its manufacture and its use and its effect on the organic matter in the soil. You know, we're looking hard at how we can improve our nitrogen use efficiency, but ultimately reducing overall rates. And we've cut it down 15% now since we've started along this journey with not an impact on quality or yield. So That's encouraging, but there's still a long way to go. I'd like to get down to about a 50% cut without affecting profitability, because, you know, although we might not get the same yield, we'll be saving, you know, £100 a hectare in nitrogen fertilizer. So I guess there's a few inputs we've cut back on. Insecticides is one. So we haven't used insecticides on our arable crops here for the last 4 years. That is including oilseed rape, no BYDV spraying for aphids in the autumn. And again, we're not seeing detriment in not using those products. We haven't been using fungicide seed dressings for the last 3 years. We treat with zinc and manganese, but not a fungicidal seed dressing. And again, we're not seeing any detriment to that. And in fact, we're actually seeing faster plant emergence as well. And that to me is really encouraging. You know, there's a cost saving there, but actually if we're trying to have a more fungally dominated soil, why are we putting a fungicide in the soil next to the seed that wants to have a symbiotic relationship with the fungi that you just killed off? So kind of logically, you know, the plants and the soil have an integral relationship that, you know, we've sort of interfered with. So we're sort of rolling the clock back on that.
It's like you're recruiting a whole army of volunteers to help you, Jake, in farming better. These fungal and bacteria guys are there sort of on your side and there to do a lot of the work for you, including, say, if you put synthesized ag chems onto the crop to try and get what you used to get.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So we took that another stage last year, actually. We had 2 4-hectare blocks where we treated with biological products instead of fungicides. So we were comparing a 4-spray, fairly traditional farm standard approach versus a biological approach. And although the yield was higher in the farm standard, I think it was, off the top of my head, it was 8.3 versus 8.1. So, you know, it was 160, 170 kilos difference, which equated to, I think, £27 a hectare more wheat sold. But actually the margin was higher in the biological products because we'd spent £40 less per hectare. So although the numbers aren't, you know, they're not massive, we haven't saved £100, the fact that if we still have this, you know, even if you said that's not statistically different, the fact that we haven't used synthesized products and came up with the same result, that has to be a positive outcome.
Oh, and I guess the non-biological is a one-off moment, almost a bit like a sticking plaster to stop bleeding. But the biologicals is not only, if it's going to benefit in year one, it's also creating more benefits beyond that in subsequent years. So yeah. So it's a preventative rather than just dealing with the symptom. And I think that's very exciting. We're going to do a whole series of work around biological treatments as alternatives. So we'll probably peel that back another day. So I look forward to bringing you on that one again. So it's a really great practical stuff there, Jake. And at the same time, you really, you know, you've hit some important elements around the world we live in, and as opposed to the climate change area. There's a lot of talk about regenerative agriculture and agroecology. And to the outside world looking in, it doesn't really feel like it's anything specific other than a set of good feelings, like you said. Do you think that it needs a protocol or a definition? Or is this, because I'm thinking as a food branding person from my background, that I'm thinking, well, are we missing a trick here? Because are we, you know, in the States, we're starting to see some products be branded around the regenerative farming system, but they have a protocol to back that up. Are we moving in that direction here? Is that a good idea? And is the name regenerative agriculture, and I struggle with this word, agroecology, so if I struggle saying it, it's not a great start. And what is the difference between the two, regen versus agroecology? And is there a difference?
Well, I'm not sure that there is, really. It's all trying to promote a more natural way of farming, I think. All the techniques employed in agroecology would fit into regenerative agriculture and vice versa from where I sit. It would be fantastic to get a food label or a food brand as regen or nature-friendly farming. You know, that's already been collared by somebody. But I guess there's two angles to it as well. There's the fact that we hope and believe that the food we're growing will be more nutritious in terms of its, you know, food density, but that will change year on year with climate. And I don't know, and you'll know, Rob, from a food marketing point of view, how you justify that and sell that. So that's one side of it. The other side of it, which I do think we can, as a group of farmers put together, is the core principles of what we're trying to do. So, you know, move the soil as little as possible, have a diverse rotation, have cover crops, you know, have livestock in there as well. You know, livestock are really important in terms of that recycling of nutrients, whether that's grazing cover crops or crop residue, turning that muck back onto the field, adding compost, all these techniques are all aimed at improving the soil health to grow healthier product, healthier food for people. And I would, you know, I'd love to see, you know, farmers who are farming this way, and it would need accreditation, I think, in due course. And again, then you come back to this, well, what do you measure it against? And then people start to think that, well, we need a number because it is then easy to measure against. Your soil must have an organic matter of 4.8%. Well, that's easy on some soils, on the fens, very difficult on sand and gravel. And they might be farming in completely opposing ways, but would still tick that box. So I think it's got to be much more of a holistic approach. I mean, I've got my LEAF badge here on here. LEAF is really important, I think, in terms of integrated pest management and how we can develop that sustainability in the industry. Obviously, they've got a LEAF mark. I mean, there are challenges, but it would be very helpful to get to a point where we could brand a green product.
As with my food products hat on, the only benefit to a protocol to consumers if they understand it, and if they don't understand it, then all we've created is bureaucracy and costs. So, I think it's fair to say there have been some big challenges with other, let's not name them, protocols that have been created for farmers that haven't been valued by the consumers, because it's difficult to understand them. You know, everyone's got lives to lead, and they don't really want to know the scientific detail of what's going on. And that applies to a car manufacturer as well as it applies to farming. And actually, this comes down to trust ultimately. So if you can create a trust protocol and a name that makes sense instantly to a consumer, then this has got potential. But maybe actually if it simply is more profitable because you're using biological treatments and using a whole range of different cropping systems, integrated pest management, all the different areas that you've already mentioned today. And actually simply is good business, good, you know, not only good for you, how you feel about the world, but also good business as it makes more money, or is more sustainable. So it deals with as we call the soil health is an insurance scheme against climate change. Then actually maybe that's enough anyway. But crucially, I guess the last part I'd like to touch on is you mentioned carbon a couple of times. Do you think carbon sequestration markets are part of this, or do you think they are it?
Really good question. I think there is a huge opportunity for us to be able to increase the amount of carbon that we have in our soils as an industry across the country. There'll be very few soils I would expect in this country, apart from some grasslands, that are at their sort of, if we said, peak carbon. And I know that there are people out there looking at how they can offset carbon from other industries, and they're looking at agriculture to do this. I think we have a real worry about covering the country with trees and taking a lot of land out of production. Ultimately, we have to be able to grow food to sustain the population. Now, you know, we also waste a lot of food in this country and across the world. So I think we need to tackle this from, as always, it's a complicated argument, but it needs to come from various angles. But I think fundamentally, we still need to have a food industry here in the UK, and we need to do that whilst improving our soil carbon. I think there are markets coming along. It's really early days yet. And again, they're all grappling, as far as I'm aware, of how do you measure it? How do you measure your soil carbon today? And then how do you measure it and compare it in 5 years' time? And I think that's, until we can sort that out, you're into a very much of a, not a gentleman's agreement, but a very much along the lines of, well, if we farm in this way, by not moving the soil, by having cover crops and keeping our fields covered, the science tells us that we will be having an increase in soil carbon within the fields. And I think that is probably the position we need to be at the moment, to say that we have bought into these ideas. This is what we're doing. The science is backing that up. And yes, let's take some tests. So we test for loss on ignition for organic matter. We also started doing potassium permanganate tests, which is measuring the active carbon in there. We've got this fungi and bacteria relationship test that literally just started this autumn. But all these things, you know, they take 4 or 5 years to show an increase or a decline, rather than a sort of a 1 year cycle. So it is really quite tricky to be able to do that, unless there's some, you know, again, we talk about agritech helping. Unless we can use drones and satellite imagery to measure carbon. I know people are working on this now, measure that now, but then actually we've got footage from 5, 10, 15 years ago. Well, can we run that then through the software program now and pick up changes from back then? I don't know whether that's possible, but that might be a way to look at it. You know, what was Jake doing when he started at Overbury in 2003? And where is he now? Everything's crossed that we've shown an improvement, but you know, that's the challenge that I think we face.
Yeah, it sounds like though that it's the carbon is your almost like the byproduct of creating a more biological environment. It's what happens. But like us, we eat food and then we have to all go to the lavatory. So yeah. It's what comes, and yes, it should. And if it stays in the soil, that's good for the world from climate change perspective. But it is the biologicals that are driving this, and they're driving the vehicle, and what comes out the back is what comes out the back. And if we're measuring what comes out the back only, we could be missing what's happening and what direction we're going in from where it's been driven. And, yeah. and the feeling we're getting from a lot of very important, interesting people is that the biologicals are driving this, and therefore understanding that is actually going to be the key area, rather than trying to drive the car by looking, turning around and using a mirror to drive forward.
Yes.
That seems to be an area of interest. So we're coming to the end now, but I'd like to ask you, I'm very grateful for some incredible people I've met in my life. And this is industry people, you know, aside from your family and obviously important people like that. industry people that you've met that you would almost want to say thank you to, and people that are really helped you think and in a way that's where you are now.
You know, I've been really lucky, partly from Penelope, who's my employer here at Overbury, to enable me to go on my Nuffield Farming Scholarship. That was pretty life changing, and how we've turned the farm around here to now doing what we're doing. So you know, she needs a huge pat on the back. Through that organisation, there's a huge number of people, but I think Bill Ritchie, who's down in New Zealand, who was one of the designers and creators of the no-till drill that we use. His sort of vision of the concept, if you like, of what we're trying to achieve. And the implications on the soil was pretty special. John Pawsey, actually, as well, who's an organic farmer in Suffolk, who, again, he'd be fascinating to interview. An awful lot of knowledge from the organic sector that we are starting to now employ ourselves. Andy Howard, Nuffield Scholar, who got me into intercropping 4 or 5 years ago, and we're cropping all of our oilseed rape with companion cropping. And that's helped with reduced fertilizers, reduced insecticides, reduced in fungicides. So there's a lot of people. So that's just a little small gathering of them, really.
Fantastic. And as an Nuffield Scholar myself, I couldn't agree with you more. It's been an amazing world internet of people, and long may it continue. It's a wonderful, truly wonderful organization. So if you're thinking about applying, apply wherever you are.
Absolutely, wherever you are.
I think there are 12 countries around the world now that are doing them. So amazing. Yeah. All the Nuffield International. So very quickly, your last question. What's the next for Jake and Overbury? What's the thing that you hope to achieve in the near future? Single, simple answer, please.
Yeah, well, single answer. We need more integration of livestock into the farming system. We haven't really talked about that today, but we've got 1,100 ewes. We need a different type of animal, all their animal byproducts on the farm to help reduce our carbon footprint, as well as add more diversity to the business and business exposure to climate markets and things like that. So I think that would probably be the one thing on top of all the other bits that we'd be aiming to look at.
Brilliant, Jake. I'm not going to take any more of your time. Congratulations again on being Soil Farmer of the Year. You are an inspiration yourself, so thank you. There's going to be a lot of people who listen to this. I'm sure that they'll gather some inspiration themselves to take things forward. So well done. It's amazing achieving what you've done. And we look forward to seeing you again at the next Nuffield conference in real, hopefully
in real
next year.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, Rob. Great to see you.
Thank you for listening to the Soil Health Hub podcast. If you'd like to learn more and join us, visit soilhealthhub.com. See you next time.